all through this series, that music comes on, I just want to move a little bit, dance a little bit, but I'll hold off. I don't know that that would do us any good with my skills here. But we are moving through this series. We kicked off this fall, CP4NE, as we've been talking about what it means to be us. What does it mean to be the Center Point Church family? Where are we going? How are we going to get there? Why do we exist? What does that look like as we live it out sort of in the day-to-day, week-to-week rhythms of life? And we started out with this idea that we exist not just for ourselves here. God has done something in us and through us. He's planted us here for a reason that goes beyond just what happens inside these four walls. It's something that his Spirit has been moving in us for years now as a way to impact and touch and reach out beyond what happens here, even in this building. We talk about that even in terms of wanting to see all of New England experience all of Jesus, because we understand that we exist here to live and to share a life-changing relationship with Jesus. And we've experienced that ourselves, what it means to be impacted and touched by Jesus in our own lives. It then propels something inside of us to say, this is going to make the whole world better. If more people could experience the fullness of Jesus, then that would make our world a better place. And each person would experience something powerful in that. And so we recognize where God has placed us here, that we exist not just for ourselves, but to be a part of what he's doing in this entire region. God hasn't forgotten about us up here in New England. He's alive and well and active, and his presence is real. And so as we experience that, we recognize he calls us to be a part of what he's doing, to share his love and his grace with the world around us. So last week we talked about this idea of how do we enter into that life-changing relationship with Jesus? And it is through Jesus that our lives are transformed. Jesus said, "I am the gate." He is the entryway. And so when we enter into this life with Jesus, what's made possible is that we enter into that gateway, we become a part of his flock, his family, and he is our protector. He gives us nourishment. And we experience something very different than what we would experience on our own. Our own tendency is to move towards death and destruction, but Jesus gives us the opportunity to experience life. But it leaves us with a question: what does it actually mean to live that life? What does it mean to be living, a person who is living that life-changing relationship with Jesus? How does that actually work out in the day today? So it doesn't just become a one-time thing that I did way back here, who knows when, but it actually continues to move in my life in such a way that I continue to experience that life-changing relationship. My life continues to be transformed. What does that look like? So we're going to talk about that a little bit this morning, but as we prepare to do that, why don't you pray with me again here. Father, thank you that you have not left us alone. And as we consider what it means that we're not alone, we can look around this space and we can see that we're not alone because you've brought us together. Each one of us is here for a reason, for a purpose. You have something for us as we gather together in this space and draw our attention towards you. You desire to do something in us, and you use us together in each other's lives. You're shaping us and molding us through each other. And so we recognize that as we walk into a space like this, we're not alone. But we also recognize that your presence, you've promised, is with us. Not because we've earned it or deserved it, but because of your grace and your love for us as your children, those you've created and desire to have relationship with. You've said, I'm not left you, I'm with you, so thank you. And we recognize that as we come into this time now, you have something for each one of us. I pray that you remove the obstacles, the barriers, the things that might distract us, that would keep us from hearing what you have for us. Keep my words from getting in the way, so that we can clearly hear from you and experience that life transformation that you desire and have made possible for each one of us and collectively for us here all together. I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. I'm going to share something with you that may make some of you uncomfortable this morning. I'm going to show you a picture on the screen, and some of you may squirm in your seats and actually you may just want to walk out or cover your eyes so you don't have to look at this warning. Okay, here it is. I drove to church this morning with this as my gas gauge. It's true. Oh, those were like really gasps of like profound impact. I'm sorry to those of you who don't go below like 3/4 of a tank and not feel some sense of anxiety that you're going to run out of gas. I don't drive them anywhere because if they got into my car, well, it's not really clean anyways, but they also 3/4 of a tank and it's like, oh, where's the next gas station? We got to pull off. For me, I sort of live a little bit more on the edge. I'm not what you call a thrill seeker. I'm not somebody who really lives my life taking high risks, but when it comes to gas in my car, I do. Somewhat unintentionally. All right, so a few weeks ago, you think I would have learned my lesson, you know, even today. I'm talking about a few weeks ago. I had this series of days where I was just kind of busy and, you know, moving from one thing to the next. I would get up in the morning, I would drive to work, I'd get here, and I'd say, oh, car's almost empty. I've got to stop for gas on the way home. Right? Some of you who are in a similar situation to me and understand the world as I do, you recognize that when you come out of work and you had a busy day, you go out to the car and you're thinking, I don't want to stop for gas now. Like, I want to get home. That's where I want to be. So I got in the car, went home, and I'm like, I'll just do it in the morning. You know, I live up the hill from here, less than a mile. You know, so I like, honestly, in my mind, I think, well, it's downhill. I could always just coast in and like probably make it. And then there's a gas station, just like a walk away. I can do that. So this went on and it was like this unintentional decision I was making to not get gas for multiple days. And this one day, same thing happened, and end of the day, not only did I just want to go home, I was actually late in getting home to bring my son to soccer practice over at Runlet Middle School. And so I get in the car, and I drive home, and I'm just in a rush to get there. I pick him up. He gets in the car. I'm like, let's go. Come on, we're almost late. I pull over, drive around town, get across the Runlet, and as I hit the stop sign and go to turn left, I'm just about where the fields are over there at Runlet. I'm driving on this little back road, but there's just all these people, right? I mean, people dropping off kids, picking up kids, people at practice, people watching games. Everything's going on there. All these people around, and I feel this. Now, some of you don't know what that sound means, but the ones who responded, I know you know me. That's the sound of your car running out of gas. It starts to stutter a bit, and I say, oh no, I can't run out of gas in the middle of the street. I've got to be able to pull over. I've got to pull over. So then I realize, oh no, I'm on the wrong side of the street. There's no parking on the right side of the street. I've got to turn around. Pull into the driveway on the right, turn around. By some miracle, I'm able to pull over to the side of the road. It just like the space opened up, the light shined out. Oh, the angels sang, and I pulled in and did the final. Oh, I made it. Save myself the humiliation of having to gather people around to push me off the road into a parking space. So I'm sitting there and I realize what this now means, right? I've got to make the call. I've made this call. It's been a long time. I've made this call before, but my backup, I've got to call in my backup, and my backup is my wife, who's already been running around with other kids, taking them to different places, and she has no desire to come over. I was bringing Andy to practice, so she didn't have to. I make the call. And before I even could say, you know, I explained the situation, I said, you know how I like to, I don't really get gas all that often in the car, and yeah, I'll be there. I didn't even have to finish the story. She knows me, right? It's been several years since this has happened, but this is not the first time she's received this call. And so she grabs the gas from our little tank that we use for our lawnmower, throws it in the car, drives over, drops it off, and I grab the tank, and now I've got to do the humiliating, like, try and like, how do you hide the big gas tank like this while you're trying to like dump it in the, and so I don't dump it in all the way, and I'm sitting there in the car, and I'm like, okay, let it sit for a minute. I don't know how to make this work any better. Turn the ignition, nothing. Okay, what am I, like, I don't flood the engine. Do I need to dump some of the carburetor? Like, I don't know what I'm doing. So I wait, and then I realize I didn't put all the gas in. I'm like, I can't make this call back to Sarah again. So I look at that little bit of gas. I'm like, I don't know how this can make any difference, but I'm going to give it one more shot. Go and dump the rest of the gas in the tank. Get back in and pray really hard. And the car starts. The car starts, and I drive, and I get to the gas station and fill it up and think, I'll never make this mistake ever again. I think I've made that promise many times in my life. But yet I end up in these repeated situations where my car is running on empty. And I'm not paying attention to the warning symbols. I'm not paying attention to the things that are popping up on my dashboard that are saying, hello, time for gas. And I just go about living my life until that point where it just completely runs out. And when I call Sarah in those moments, you know what, fortunately for me, she doesn't do? She doesn't say, okay, Ryan, you ran out of gas again. You know what to do. Try a little harder to get home now. She doesn't say, just push a little bit more, strive and do your best, pick yourself up and make that car go. She can't say that to me and actually have it prove effective. Why? Because the car was intended to run on fuel, not my effort. I can have all the best intentions of driving my car where I want it to go and to use it in the way it's intended, but if it's not filled with that fuel, it's not going to go. No matter how hard I try, it's not going to get there. It will remain on empty. I need it to be filled up in my car. And I think this applies in many ways to our lives as well. Some of you can already see where I'm going. We live our lives the same way that I drive my car, right on the edge of empty. And we go through life with these experiences expecting that we can just get where we want to go. We define our lives in particular ways and say, this is what it looks like to have the good life. This is what it means for me to have my life and to be able to call it successful. This is what it means for me to experience the fullness of life. And we hold it out there and we look and we say, that's what I want. And we listen to this message that wells up inside of us that says, I can just get there if I try hard enough. And then we hear that message that no one would ever tell us when our car runs out of gas. But when we're running low, people just say, well, you just got to pick yourself up. You got to get back out there and give it another shot. You just got to push a little bit more. You've got to strive and grasp and pull what's in front of you just to get where you think you need to go. I'm what you would also call a people-pleasing pacifist. You might not call it, I just gave myself that label, but I like to keep people happy. I like to keep situations out of conflict. Like this is a part of how I've defined my life success. Not because I intentionally set it out that way, but from the time I was, these are the ways that I would try and control the situations around me to make sure that I kept people happy. Their expectations for me determined how I would live my life with them. And so in situations with coaches and with teachers and with friends and, well, my sister's actually here and she might disagree with that. I wasn't always necessarily considering her expectations for me. But in most situations, I would try to control my life in a particular way to keep other people happy and do what they wanted me to do. And that's how I determined what my life should look like. And so I would give every effort I had to impress and to keep people happy and to do what they wanted me to do. My coaches on the courts or on the fields, I was always super coachable and I would always just try and live up to those expectations. And then my teachers, I would put every effort in and with my parents and with other relationships I have, I just give myself in this and strive for these things. And then when I wouldn't meet those expectations, and I couldn't make it happen by my own effort, what I thought it should look like, I would hide myself in the shame of that. Right? It creates this barrier in my life. And so I would hide underneath this shame that I couldn't meet their expectations. So my coach at halftime would be giving a speech about how the team wasn't doing what it was supposed to be doing. And I would bury my head down and believe that every word he was saying was specifically being spoken about me, which wasn't necessarily the truth. But I would bury myself then in that shame, and I would hide. And I wouldn't experience the fullness of life that I thought I was supposed to have. I would experience frustration and emptiness and disappointment. Even though I had given my best effort like I was supposed to, there were moments of success, but there were sure just as many, if not more, moments of disappointment and frustration. You may not be the people-pleasing pacifist, but maybe you're the free floater whose life is determined and you've determined success in a full life as being no controls, no boundaries. I can do what I want to do whenever I want to. I'm spontaneous and I can go in any direction. And so as long as my options are open, I'm good. Or maybe you're the person who's the rule follower, who believes that if I can just keep everything in the order and do all the little steps along the way, then my life will be good. Or maybe you're the power broker, the person who's always attempting to manipulate situations to give yourself a position of power so you can take that step forward. Or you're the money maker who believes that if you just have more stuff, then you'll finally be happy and content. The fame chasers, the thrill seekers, there are all sorts of categories and ways that within our own personalities and experiences we've been shaped to picture this life and what it should look like. And we believe that if we just give enough effort, and the world tells us if you just push, if you just strive a little bit more, if you just grasp and claw to get ahead, eventually you'll reach that life. And then we end up in those places of frustration and disappointment. Moments of success that give us a glimpse of maybe what's possible, and then circumstances out of our control and it slips right through our fingers. I experience this in my own life, not just with other people, but also in my relationship with God. From an early age, not by anybody's intention or even my own, I began to look at God the same way I looked at everybody else. He was someone, the big one, that I had to keep the happiest. And so I would line everything up in particular ways to do the things I thought I was supposed to do. Check them off my list. And I would think, okay, now I should be experiencing something, right? Shouldn't my life look a certain way? And yet I would find that my striving and my pushing and my reaching and my grasping was only leading to emptiness. It wasn't leading to the fulfillment and the fullness that I was expecting to receive. And so my striving, my grasping, my pushing wasn't producing the life in any regard that I desired. And Jesus speaks to this very thing. Jesus spoke to his disciples as he was preparing them for when he would be leaving. He spoke very clearly and decisively with them about these very things, and into a world that tells us and told them that it was about their effort, that it was about their pushing and their striving and their grasping by their own power. He said something very different. So in the gospel, as John recorded it, Jesus' life, as John wrote it down for us, he says these words. You can open if you have your Bibles there. John chapter 15. If you need to use your table of contents to find that, go right ahead and do that. You can open your apps up, or you can on your phone, or you can grab a Bible in the pocket in front of you there. You can follow on the screens. But as I read these words from Jesus, he's saying them to his disciples in a particular context and time, but they're also being communicated to us today. And so as you listen to these words, even imagine in your own experience, in your own life, in those own situations where you've been striving and pushing and grasping and finding emptiness and frustration. Listen to the good news that Jesus has in these verses here. John chapter 15, verses 1 through 8. I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that's thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. And this is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. The good news that Jesus speaks into a world that says the way to get where you want to go is pushing, striving, grasping by your own power. Jesus offers and invites us into a whole different pathway, a whole different pathway, a counterintuitive pathway. Jesus invites us to simply remain in him. The world says thrive or strive. The world says push. The world says, grasp. Jesus says, be still. Remain in me. So what does that look like? Well, he gives us a picture of what that looks like to remain in him. And this picture is one that's actually used to describe a picture of health in terms of a relationship with God, even into the Old Testament times. So as God was speaking to his people that he selected and called together, he gave them an image of what it would look like to live as his people, to follow after him and to do what he desired for them to do. And throughout these books of prophecy in the Old Testament, where these prophets, these messengers from God, would declare to the people who God was and what he desired for them, they would use this image, and God would speak through them to use this image of a vine that was planted. And time again, it gives this picture of what should be a beautiful, healthy, thriving vine that produces fruit and displays to the world a healthy vision of a beautiful vine. And then, in the same ways, the prophets drew attention to what the vine actually looked like. It wasn't meeting the expectations or the desires that God had for it. Instead, it was wild and growing in its own way, or dying and withering. And so we find this picture even in the Old Testament of people who were striving to do things in their own way to please God. They took what he had intended for them and turned it into something of their own effort. And so with that context in mind, Jesus says something to these disciples who would hearken back. They would draw back to that image as he says these words in verse 1. I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. Where Israel had failed, Jesus was successful. He was able to live out in this world the full display of fruitfulness, the full life that God had intended. He showed us what it would look like perfectly to live in God's will, to live out God's kingdom, to live out the way that God had intended in the midst of this broken world. And so Jesus says, I am the true vine. My Father is the gardener. And then he, with this image, draws our attention to what, as disciples, those who are following after him, what it would look like then to be a part of this vine. And he says, I'm the vine and you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. You break a branch off from its source, from its life source, and it can no longer produce fruit. And Jesus says, if you break yourself apart from me, if you pursue by your own striving and efforts, you choose to go your own direction, then you won't produce the full life that I have offered to you. And so Jesus says, just like the branch must remain and focus its efforts on remaining connected to this life source, this is how we experience, as his disciples, this is how we experience the fullness of life. As we remain in him, we remain connected with him. Our role in this relationship is to grow and to bear fruit, but not by our own efforts and our own striving. Just like a branch can't produce fruit by itself, neither can we accomplish the life, the full life, the successful life, the beautiful life that God has offered to us by our own striving and our own effort. That word remain is used 8 times in these verses. It's used several more in the following verses even after this. And so Jesus is really drawing our attention to something significant with this word remain. Because it's a word that's counterintuitive. It speaks to something that's different than we would naturally think is the way to produce something. Our natural tendency is to believe that by effort and by maximizing the resources that we have, we can produce something in and of ourselves. And Jesus says, in this relationship, in this equation, in this picture I'm giving you of what it means to live the most fulfilling and fruitful life, your effort isn't into pursuing and striving after those things, but rather pursuing and striving after Jesus. And so it's different. It's different. And we experience something in that relationship with Jesus as we pursue after him. We experience nourishment. We experience growth. This is what we talk about in that life-changing relationship. There are things that happen to us that God does in us that we experience ourselves. And out of that, then we bear fruit. Our life looks different. And Jesus doesn't specifically list out what does the fruit then look like, but we can read through the Bible and particularly through the New Testament, and we can see, even as we spent some time here just a few months ago talking about the fruit of the Spirit. And so in many ways, this fruit ends up looking like Jesus. We look like, our lives look more like Jesus as we remain connected and attached to him. His life flows through us. It changes us. And what does it change us to look like? It looks more like him. And some of the words that were used to describe what that life in Jesus and his Spirit look like are love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control. And so this is a fruit-filled life. This is a fulfilling life, a life that is lived with all of those components, all of that fruit bearing out in our lives. But there's other fruit as well. The fruit of these seeds that would be planted, the fruit of new branches, as the Bible describes it, being grafted in. So there's fruit that comes as we share this life in the world around us. And others partake of the goodness of God in that. And they're drawn in to be a part of this experience as well. And so that fruit is not measured simply based on external things that we can produce in and of ourselves. No, the fruit is the measurement we're looking for. And how do we measure that? How do we measure the fruit in our lives? Well, for me, early on in my life, and even when I slip back into my natural self, if I'm honest, those things look like things that I can measure based on my own performance. I look at the things that would be apparent to other people as well. And I try to manipulate and control so other people see these things in me by my own effort. So what does it mean to be a good Christian? Well, I go to church, I read the Bible, I pray, I try to do those things in ways that other people can see them. And so I'm driven in some ways by what I'm striving after in this image of what other people expect of me. That's my tendency. And so it's not as though going to church, reading the Bible, and praying are bad things. Those are very good things. But it's my posture in that as I do them that opens me up to what God desires to do in me. Or on the other hand, allows me to experience something of my own striving and fulfillment that I accomplished on my own. And so our temptation is to fall into the trap of legalism. And legalism puts those behavioral standards out in the forefront. It says, you have to meet these standards and do these things. And if you don't do them, well, you need to try harder because you're not given enough effort to get there. And we not only hold these standards over ourselves, but we end up holding them over other people. And so rather than living openly in the grace of God by which we receive forgiveness and his healing and transforming power in our lives, we experience condemnation and judgment and shame. And like me in many of those relationships, we have a tendency then to hide ourselves. And Jesus says, no, this isn't the rhythm of life that I've intended for you. This isn't the pattern of living that I desire for you. Here's what I desire for you is to remain in me. Remain in me. So we recognize those experiences of life that seem to be moving out of sync with what God would desire for us. When we find ourselves, the measurement of our fruit would be things like whether we're loving God more and loving other people more. And when we find ourselves out of sync in that, we come back to Jesus again. We say, Jesus, I was trying to do it on my own. He says, that's all right. Remain in me. I've given you everything you need. By my divine power, I have given you everything you need to live out the fullness of life that I've offered to you. And so we return to him. In many ways, it could be talked about in the terms of a rhythm of life that actually sort of we could draw out from a pendulum. This is my makeshift pendulum, but it works. So when we think about our lives and this rhythm, we think about this movement of life. If you just kind of watch, right? I'm going to try and hold my hand as steady as possible so you can see an actual, you know, pendulum movement. But the swinging back and forth. There's something smooth and easy and peaceful about that. As I was looking at some videos earlier this week, I actually found this, like, these pendulum videos, and I want to say I spent more time watching pendulum videos than I probably would like to admit, but there was something, I sent one to a couple of people on staff, actually, and I was like, this is mesmerizing. Like, there's just something really peaceful about that. And as we look at the life of Jesus, we actually find he lived in this really peaceful, this peaceful rhythm of life. And we think about that rhythm, we find that it swings easily back and forth between two directions. On one hand, we have this direction of receiving abundantly. We hold on to those promises and we experience of God's fullness, what he's offered to us. And so the Bible tells us that God is a God of love. The Bible tells us that God has offered to us his forgiveness. The Bible tells us that our God has extended his kindness towards us. And so we receive that. There are moments where we draw ourselves, even when we're here, there are moments where our attention is grabbed by that. And God does something in those moments to transform the way we see the world and the way we understand it. And so it's not me walking into church just thinking, I got to check this off my list. This will make God happy. It's me walking into church with an expectation and a belief that God wants to do something in my life and touch me in a way and draw my attention to something. It's not just reading and studying my Bible so I can build up enough head knowledge so I can outduel somebody in some argument or debate. But it's so that I can understand more fully who Christ is. And as I understand more fully who he is, it impacts and changes my heart. I become a different person. And as I read about who Christ is, I see who I'm not. And he brings my attention to areas of my character that are flawed and weak. But rather than just sending me back out to live in my own effort to try and get somewhere, right? Don't our lives feel like that sometimes? This is my pendulum. Doesn't feel very good. Jesus says, no, stop. I've got something for you here. Receive fully from me. And so we receive from God and we put ourselves in those places where we can receive from him. We recognize where we fall short, but we remain in him. We remain in him. It's not up to us. But the temptation would be to stay there, wouldn't it? Where it feels really good. Like, thank you. All right, now can we just all close the doors, lock everybody else out, and I'll just live my life receiving of God's goodness. But in actuality, that's not the fullness of life God's called us to. You see, this rhythm, even the rhythm that Jesus lived in, is that he went to his Father. He went to his Father. He had those moments of solitude early in the morning where he would move away while the rest of the disciples and other people were sleeping. And he'd go up on the mountainside and he would receive from God. But where do we find him later in that day? He wasn't still up on the mountainside. No, he was out extending and sharing God's love and grace and hope and peace. You see, that receiving from God was what equipped him to be able to go into the world to share extravagantly of what God has given him. See, through the New Testament, when we're given these commands and these directions of what our life should look like, we often take those as isolated things and we say, oh, well, I'm supposed to be kind. And our mind immediately defaults into, I've got to give more effort to be kind. But what we actually see is that if I haven't experienced kindness here, I'm not going to be able to share God's kindness with other people. I'm only going to be able to share the kindness that I have the capacity to share, which is about this big. So God says, you've received my kindness, now live in that kindness with others. Share it with others. He says, forgive other people. Why? Because you have been forgiven. He says, love other people. How can we do that? I can't love other people. Love my enemies? I can hardly love the people I like. He says, you love because I have first loved you. Those aren't just trite little phrases that we find in the Bible. There's depth and meaning to that. And so when we find ourselves coming up short and running on empty over here, because some of us like to live this way too, don't we? We think I'm just serving, and I'm going to do. And we're doing all these good things. But ultimately, we end up in this place of burnout. And we don't have enough left anymore. And we're in the place of frustration and disappointment and emptiness. And unfortunately, some of the advice we get, even in a spiritual sense, is, well, try harder. We just got to do it. Suck it up. But what does God say? He says, no, live in this rhythm. This peaceful, abiding, remaining rhythm. And so we receive from God, and then we share. We remain in Him, and then we bear fruit. And so this is the experience of living that we've been invited to participate in. Not our own striving to make our lives look like what we think it should be. In fact, we find that God actually uses the experiences of our lives where those things are drawn to our attention. And Jesus talks about this, right? He says, those experiences in your life where you feel, oh, this hurts. I thought I was supposed to do this, and now I'm seeing I'm doing it this way. I thought I was supposed to be forgiving, and I'm having a hard time forgiving. What's getting in the way of that? And so I open myself up to say, God, I give this to you. I'm remaining in you. And what does it say? Jesus says that those things are pruned away. And so our own desires get pruned away. And what do we find is the promise that we'll be given anything we ask as we remain in Him. This isn't some trick to, like, you know, get rich quick. Because we find as we remain in Jesus and our life looks more like Him, our desires grow in alignment with His. And so He has confidence to say that as you remain in me, the things you're going to ask for are going to be kingdom things. They're going to be God things. And the fruit that you bear, listen to this promise that Jesus gives. He says, the fruit that you bear shows that you're my disciples. You're going to look more like Jesus. So it will show the world that you're my disciples. And in that verse 8, look at the promise that Jesus gives. What happens as we bear this fruit? In verse 8, this is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. The master gardener is growing the vine. And when the vine is healthy and it's fruitful and it's living in the fullness of its beautiful display, it's displaying the character and nature of God alive and well in this world through us. Who does that honor? Who does that glorify? Whose name does that lift high? Him, the gardener, the one who's making it all happen. And so this is how we live out the fullness of the life that Jesus has invited us into. And so the very same things that I would try to do as a younger person, and even fall into the trap of doing as an older person. That list that I would have of all the things I was supposed to do that would make me the good Christian boy, I can do those very same things with a whole new posture and a whole new understanding of what God is actually doing in those habits and those disciplines and the ways that I'm opening myself up to Him. I remember there was one experience I had that's, for whatever reason, just stands out so fresh in my mind. I can't remember. I was probably about 12, 13 years old. So old enough to start coming to a little bit more of a self-awareness and a little bit less just concrete in my thinking. And I remember, I knew I had this sense of just, I know I'm supposed to read my Bible. I just, when I read it, just doesn't do anything for me. Like, I don't get it, and I know I'm supposed to pray. So I was falling into this pit of obligation and shame. And I was falling under the weight of this. And this wasn't stuff I felt like I could talk about with other people. Why? Because that wouldn't meet their expectations. I'm supposed to have it all together. I couldn't articulate that as a 12 or 13-year-old, but I understand that's how I was feeling. And I remember there was this evening where after dinner I went back to my room and I was probably just trying to not do my homework and waste time, but I saw the Bible sitting on my desk and I was like, all right, I'm supposed to do this. All right. Pick it up and start reading. And there was this, I don't know what I was reading. I can't remember the specifics of what pages. I remember there was this sense of a meaning that came to me through that. There was something that God did through the pages of that Bible in those moments that lit me up. And I was like, whoa. Like, I probably had experienced that at some point, but it was so clear to me in that moment. And the sad part is, for me, I didn't feel like I could then go, I was supposed to already be having those moments. How could I share this good news with anybody else? Because I had been living with that shame and that hiding posture. But it stands out to me, even from those early years. Because over the past several years of my life, as I've grown up and as I've experienced a freedom that comes from experiencing the fullness of God and the life that He's offered to us as we remain in Him, that it doesn't have to be a burden that we carry. Because it's not about our striving and our pushing and our grasping that makes it happen. It's about putting ourselves in a place where we are connected to the source of life. And it happens moment by moment. It happens hour by hour. It happens day by day. It happens week by week. It happens season by season. And we find ourselves in those places where God works through that rhythm that He's invited us into of remaining in Him and bearing the fruit of a fulfilling life, a life that we could never imagine or make up or cause to happen by our own power. We're invited to receive of God's abundant goodness and then be a part of sharing that with the rest of the world. Let's pray. God, we can't comprehend the fullness of what You have done for us. We can only see dimly. And yet it is amazing and overwhelming. That You would offer to us, those who have turned our backs on You, those who have walked our own way, You would offer us new life. And that You would do it in such a way that we don't even have to carry the weight of it through our own striving and efforts. But You've given us the gift of Jesus, He's not just the entryway, but He is the source of that life through and through. So as we sit here in these moments, just pause. Reflect on your own life. Examine where are you out of rhythm? Where are you seeking and striving to accomplish your vision of life by your own power? Where are you feeling empty and dry and barren? What is God drawing to your attention in these moments and inviting you to experience as you hand it over to Him? God, thank You for the powerful work of Your Spirit that touches our hearts and our lives and empowers us to live in the fullness of Jesus. May we draw on that power as we continue to walk in our lives each day. In Jesus' name, amen.